need to do is to legitimize the discussion.
Superior Court Judge James P. Gray.
All we need to do is let people realize that it's okay to talk about drug policy, because as soon as people realize what's happening, I promise you they will absolutely want to stand up in unison, shake their fists, and say, no, we've got to change this. We've got to repeal drug prohibition. Every neutral study we've had in our country for the last 100 years has recommended the same thing because of the incredible benefits that will accrue, just like when we repealed alcohol prohibition.
Broadcasting from the Gulag City of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our technical producer. In just a few moments, we'll bring in our guest for the evening, U.S. Congressman Barney Frank. And let's begin with some drug war news. At last, the Democrats have examined the Ark of the Covenant that holds the drug war laws and found them to be totally lacking. On Wednesday, July 9th, the U.S. House Judiciary Committee considered the Office of National Drug Control Policy, ONDCP, Reauthorization Act of 2003. The Democrats on the committee didn't rubber stamp the bill. Instead, they used the hearing as an opportunity to attack not only the Bush administration's medical marijuana policy, but also the war on drugs in its entirety. U.S. Representative Gerald Nadler proposed an amendment that would have ended the drug czar's practice of interfering in states' efforts to pass medical marijuana legislation. Then he proposed another amendment that would have prevented the drug czar from approving the budget of any agency that used funds to arrest medical marijuana patients. All Democrats in attendance supported this amendment. More surprising was the strength with which the Democrats denounced the war on drugs. The spark that lit the fuse for this explosion was an amendment proposed by U.S. Rep. Maxine Waters, who would have deleted the entire reauthorization bill, saying, quote, "The bill was not worth the paper it's printed on." Waters declared that ONDCP is, quote, "wasteful, ineffective, and unworthy," end quote. U.S. Representative Melvin Watt, Democrat of North Carolina, called the war on drugs a, quote, "dismal failure," and said that there is nothing he is more embarrassed about than the federal government's drug policy. U.S. Rep. Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat out of Texas, also had harsh words for the war on drugs. 10 of 11 Democrats in attendance voted in favor of deleting the entire bill. That news sent to us by the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org. The U.S. government, ever fearful of the 25,000 uses of the hemp plant, has now asked the U.S. Supreme Court to reverse a ban on investigating doctors who issue prescriptions for medical marijuana. Health Canada is getting into the business of selling marijuana to the sick, even while police continue to bust people for growing or dealing the drug illegally. I think we do have the congressman online. Well, apparently not. He should be calling here any minute. In the meantime, I want to alert folks to the fact that Houston Normal is having a big meeting this coming Thursday night at Chapultepec Restaurant. It's on Richmond, just east of Montrose. It's at 7:30. We're going to attack our local elected officials. We're going to call their morals into play. We're going to take down their crazy little drug war they have going here in Houston. If you would, please give us a few moments. We'll have the congressman on. I want to say another thing here, that if you are new to listening to Cultural Baggage, we have been on the air for many months now. We've had a Friday night time. We've had members of the European Parliament. We've had Canadian senators, judges, doctors, scientists, etc., all who proclaim it's time to examine this drug war, who say it's time to reform our drug laws. You can reach our site by going to www.cultural-baggage.com. Let's see. Okay, we do have the congressman online. I'd like to just first off say that I think of this gentleman as one of the few in government that really represents the United States of America. And I'd like to welcome U.S. Congressman Barney Frank.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for being here. Yes, sir. With this half-hour show, I'm just going to jump right into it. I was looking at your website, and in regards to the recent Lawrence case, you state about the culture war against homosexuality that it's clear from Justice Scalia's opinion that he is entirely in favor of such a war being waged, and that you went on further to say a reelected George Bush, given the chance to replace Justice Stevens and O'Connor with two more followers, would thus be able to undo all the good that was done today. And I would like to submit one further thought, is that I say that the argument that Justice Kennedy made in the Lawrence case applies just as handily to the drug laws by simply deleting a couple of words, gay and sexual, from his statement, to wit, people are entitled to respect for their private lives, and the state cannot demean their existence or control their destiny by making their private conduct a crime. And your response, sir?
Well, I think you can make a strong logical argument that way. Legally, it's not conclusive, because the law, and this is where Justice Scalia went way off the track, the law tends to be fairly specific, and we have always treated different things. Private sexual behavior is different than the ingestion of substances. I mean, the argument that's made, now, I think this is wildly overdone. But remember, when you're talking about a judge, you are talking about a more limited range of authority than I have as a legislator. As a legislator, it's my job to do what I think is or isn't good or bad public policy. Judges are only allowed to knock it out if it's unconstitutional. Now, the fact is that we have a pretty good constitution, but stupidity is not unconstitutional. If it is, I'd probably have a lot fewer colleagues. So the fact that a law is poorly reasoned isn't necessarily unconstitutional. The differentiation would be this. The argument would be that taking some substances can so affect your behavior that that's why the state regulates it. Now, I think that is, in many cases, just nonsense. But judges don't have the freedom to say that. So, no, the Lawrence case doesn't automatically translate into saying that you can't regulate drugs. I think public policy ought to step way back from doing that. And I think, in fact, though, that the one phrase that's relevant is culture war. Because I think particularly if you look at the way in which we deal with marijuana in this country, what you're talking about is the people who make the laws and the people who apply the laws, they see marijuana as part of a culture war. We clearly, overwhelmingly, excessively penalize people who use marijuana, quite disproportionate to what's involved. And I think the explanation really is you have to go back to the fact that marijuana has generally been identified with the counterculture. First, it was musicians, and particularly black musicians, and these were black musicians who actually danced and dated with white women. I mean, if you go back to the 30s and 40s when all this hysteria about marijuana started. And then, of course, in the 60s, marijuana was the substance of choice among the hippies, the people who rejected all things good about America. So I do think that this culture war that Justice Scalia wants to wage on homosexuals has also been waged on people who wanted to smoke marijuana.
Thank you, sir. I do see we already have some other callers calling in. It's going to be a few minutes before we will take any of those calls, but I do appreciate it. Our number, 713-526-5738. Congressman, in regards to your statement about the judges having that lack of discretion, if you will, and almost every week I hear about another judge who quits the bench, and the reasons most times given have to do with the fact that they feel they can no longer serve justice when the Congress forces them to impose these draconian mandatory minimum sentences on drug users and small-time dealers. How do you perceive this situation, and what can we do about it?
In exactly that same way, and what people can do is write to their members of Congress. I think this is a case of cultural lag. That is, I think members of Congress are afraid that if they oppose these kinds of excessively rigid, excessively harsh drug punishments, that they might lose support politically. I think this is an issue where, frankly, the public is more enlightened than the politicians. That's not true in every case. Frankly, with regard to some things like race relations, throughout American history, it sadly hasn't been the case that the public was ahead of the politicians. But with regard to drug use, the public is ahead of the politicians. And I think what the public needs to do is write to the member of Congress and said, it's the opposite of what you think. Not only will I not be mad at you if you vote to change these excessive drug laws, I'll be mad at you if you don't. Because you're absolutely right, and we have many, many more people in prison than ought to be, many of them there for drug offenses that ought not to be criminal, that are nobody else's business, and yeah, it is true, and members of Congress are afraid that if they don't vote this way, they'll be in trouble politically, and as I said, I think the answer is the opposite. You know, my conservative colleagues talk a lot about how they're for states' rights and how we should respect the people. as you may know, and as I'm sure you know, a number of states in referenda, the people have voted to allow marijuana to be prescribed by doctors to alleviate pain. And Congress just refuses to accept that. And Congress, including members of Congress from the very states that have voted, the people have voted to allow medical marijuana to be legal, and these members of Congress arrogantly say, yeah, if you do that, we'll throw you in jail.
Yes, sir. It's time for a change. That's for certain. In that same regard, about the perceptions within Congress, this past Wednesday, the House Judiciary Committee considered the bill for renewing, I guess, the Office of National Drug Control Policy. And I heard that 10 of 11 Democrats voted against this, did not want to refund this organization. What is your take on that?
That it's a sign of progress. Yeah. 20 years ago, people in both parties were kind of afraid of this. The Democrats on the Judiciary Committee, I used to serve on that committee. I had to leave it temporarily because I became the senior Democrat on another committee and the rules wouldn't allow me to do both. But they are people who, on the whole, respect civil liberties and have a sensible understanding of the way freedom ought to be existing. And I think it's a good sign that people are becoming increasingly critical of this drug control policy office. You know, there was an effort, and actually I teamed up here in a bipartisan way with a Texan Republican, Ron Paul, who's a libertarian who, you know, there are a lot of people up here who profess to be libertarians, but they're hypocritical because when it comes to the right-wing agenda on the social side, they forget all about it. Their libertarianism is people have a right to work for 8 cents an hour, but, you know, not to smoke or drink. Ron Paul's a genuinely honest man as a libertarian, and he and I teamed up because they were going to give this Office of Drug Control Policy the right to use federal tax dollars to intervene in votes to make sure that marijuana, for instance, remained illegal, to campaign against people who were for making sense out of our drug laws and not sending people to prison. And Ron Paul and I, I'm proud to say, teamed up, and we threatened to raise enough hell about that, so they backed off.
Wonderful. Great news, sir. I'm sure you're aware of the SSDP, the Students for Sensible Drug Policy.
Oh, I work very closely with them.
Yes, sir, and they're trying to reverse the higher education bill that allows a mass murderer to get a government loan, but if you had a pot pipe, you're going to be denied. And what can how does
it's
Congress...
It's one of the stupidest things we have. I learned about this, by the way. It's a law that says that if you've had a certain degree of drug offenses, you lose 1 year of student aid, and maybe if you have two offenses, you lose it altogether. We've got people who at 18 or 19 or 20 having to get caught with drugs. By the way, let's be clear. There are people who get arrested for doing exactly what both George Bush and Al Gore did. It's just that George Bush and Al Gore lived in these kind of protected environments where they didn't get caught. You know, Al Gore admitted that he smoked marijuana. George Bush didn't admit it that he used these substances, but everybody knows that he did. And what would happen, though, if you're the kind of person who might get arrested, a lower-income person, someone who's in an area where the police would be more aggressive about it, suppose this happened to you when you're 18, 19, and maybe you had a problem with drugs and did too much, and certainly I don't advocate that people be drug abusers, but, you know, maybe 7 or 8 years later, you've kicked the habit, you're ready to go to school, you can't get a student loan because of this dumb law. And as you point out, it's a law that says if you've had drug offenses, we're not going to let you get a student loan. That does not apply to any other crime. It doesn't apply to arson, to rape, to murder, to aggravated assault, to armed robbery. And I learned about it when a group of student aid administrators came to me and said, look, this is a terrible law. It's about to go into effect. The way it got into the law, by the way, is they made Bill Clinton sign it because in 1996, the Republicans came up with this idea, and they put it into the appropriations bill that was all the money to spend for the government for the year, passed it and went home. So the only way to have killed this would have been to have stopped the government, and that obviously couldn't have been done. I immediately filed a bill to undo it. We've got a large number of people now ready to do that. And again, we've had partisan votes. The Democrats are on the whole in favor of repealing this law. The Republicans have not. What people can do is write to their member of Congress and say, singling out possession of marijuana as a reason why you're going to deny someone a student loan to go to college, but not doing similarly for any other crime is really nuts, and we think you ought to change it. I've got that bill filed, and we're pressing to change it.
And we all thank you for that, sir. We all know that this drug war fuels the fire for many people. It provides money for street corner vendors, distributors, smugglers, growers, and the drug kingpins who arrange this. But it is my opinion that sitting at the top, right up with the yacht and ambassador class there, are the bankers who launder and get as much as 80% of the dollars made from selling drugs to our children. What is your stance on that?
Well, what bankers? You mean?
The bankers who launder the money
I must say, I think if you're talking about the people who run the commercial banks, we have in recent years tightened up the laws, and it is harder for them to launder the money. On the other hand, we have this problem in fairness to the banks, and we are all concerned about privacy. And there is a kind of a dilemma you have here, because if you do too much of this, pretty soon the banks are asking everybody, well, where'd you get that money? How'd you make it? What'd you do with it? And we run into areas of privacy. So I would not blame the banks here. I must say, I do think the way the laws work, that's a part of the problem. You know, one of the major causes for murders in our big cities are drug turf wars. I mean, what you have are, we've allowed this very lucrative area of business to be totally outside the law. And it's like the Old West. They shoot them up to get the corners. And the drug laws in America are a very significant cause of crime.
Yes, sir. Absolutely right. I want to get into an area that has not too much to deal with the drug war, other than the fact that since we invaded Afghanistan, they have once again regained their stature as the
poppy growers,
poppy growers, and providing heroin to all of Europe now, I suppose. And I guess what, you know, the tie in there, I have a phrase I use in the show: the war of terror is the war on drugs with afterburners. And the same mechanisms which have stolen our rights through use of the drug war, I think, are now being applied to the general populace, that secrecy, wiretaps, and snitches are just fine because we have a, quote, valid reason. Your take on that?
Well, part of it is, let me go back to what I said before. Understand, and, you know, we do want to be consistent, obviously. That's a constraint on the anti-money laundering stuff. I mean, again, you know, cracking down excessively on money laundering, you're going to get into these same kind of privacy things. In terms of making everybody say, where'd your money come from? But I do believe that John Ashcroft does not fully appreciate civil liberties. I think we have done a reasonably good job in preventing him from cracking down as much as he would like to. There are some laws on the books that give them authority that they haven't yet used. I think the war on terror is legitimate. I mean, we should not sit back and let people engage in murderous behavior. But I think that it can be done with a lot more respect for freedom and for liberty. I'm, for instance, particularly opposed to the notion that the President of the United States can say that an American citizen is, in his judgment, a terrorist, arrest that citizen, send him to a place where he is kept completely isolated from everybody, and never have to justify that to a judge. Now, that's just outrageous. Some of these people are undoubtedly very bad people, and I would like some of them locked up for a very long time. But I think the notion that a president can, and the Attorney General, on their own hook, without going to a judge, without showing a shred of evidence, say that citizen's a bad threat and I'm locking him up, that's very scary, and that's happened, and it shouldn't be allowed.
Yes, sir. We're going to take a quick little break. We're going to come back for some calls from the listeners. Our number, 713-526-5738. We'd like to hear from you. We'll be back in 1 minute.
This is Cliff Schaefer. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on KPFT Houston. I've always been certain that drug prohibition would fall eventually, simply because it was built on ignorance and it requires ignorance to survive.
It feels like your skin is being torn right off you, and then you ache all over and get sick and you can't breathe. Your nose runs and you have a high fever, and then you pass out, but when you wake up, it starts all over again. 5 days.
Now I'm up in Vancouver at the Cannabis Cafe, smoking good old Sensimilia at the beginning of the day.
Basically, the idea is to change political consciousness in this country so that our children, hopefully our children and certainly our grandchildren, look back on the drug wars of the last few decades and of today with the same sort of distaste and contempt and even horror that we look back today on the Jim Crow laws and the slavery in our own nation's history.
Ethan Nadelman, Executive Director, Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to KPFT, the Cultural Baggage Radio Show, and we're speaking with Congressman Barney Frank. Let's go ahead and pick up that first caller, Pat, on line two.
Good evening, Congressman Frank. Thanks for participating tonight.
You're welcome.
The drug war is a prohibition economic policy that legislatively contrives into existence a $500 billion a year worldwide black market The administration and the Congress both noted this black market is providing financial aid to terrorists. This black market gives gangsters and the terrorists that they buy from virtually unfettered access to our borders, provides them weapons, explosives, and other illicit logistical comforts. I'm just wondering, after 9/11 and the Taliban-Al-Qaeda drug connection, why does the administration and the Congress, including Democrats, continue a counterproduction prohibition policy that provides real aid and logistical comforts to terrorists to attack America? Thank you.
Well, first, I disagree with most of that policy, so I'm not the best one to ask. I understand. Okay, well, I'm not very good. Then why don't I ask you? Why would you ask me? I mean, rhetorical questions are not my favorite point. You have a good point of view. Why don't you just express it instead of putting a question mark at the end of me? I will tell you that.
Well, all my congressmen are Republicans.
Well,
and
but part of the problem, I will say that this is part of the problem. Part of the problem is there are more members of Congress than are willing to say so publicly who share not all of what you thought, perhaps, but what you expressed, but much of it, and who recognize the counterproductive aspects of this. What we have, though, as I said, is a kind of cultural lag. People are afraid in my business that if they do not take this harsh, prohibitionist, very rigid, we're going to lock you up, and that's the way to solve the drug problem stance, they'll be accused of being, quote, soft on drugs. Now, you have a couple of subordinate problems. Obviously, parents worry about their kids, and people in my business are worried, and of course, this is very legitimate. Parents are worried about their children. If mothers and fathers think that somehow you're relaxing your vigilance against their children getting involved, that's a problem. There's also an ambivalence here, which is very understandable, particularly I've found among the African-American community. Given the history of racism in America, of poverty that's been associated with the racism, of the disorganized social structure that's afflicted many African-Americans, some in the black community leadership are afraid that their young people, because of all of this history and cultural disarray, might be particularly vulnerable to this. And they are worried about the impact. On the other hand, they recognize, as anybody goes who pays attention, that the laws are enforced in a very discriminatory fashion, that a young black kid who is using cocaine is much, much likelier to go to prison than a young white kid who's using cocaine. And he might become president of the United States instead, the young white kid. So those are some of the things that hold back some people. But by and large, I have to tell you that if you really want the answer why people do these things that I don't think are very thoughtful, you got to ask them.
All right, thank Pat, thank you so much. All right, let's go to our third line there. Speak to Jerry. Hello, Jerry.
Yes.
Hey, Jerry, you have a question for the congressman?
Yes, I do. Congressman Frank, first of all, I want to thank you for being one of the leading voices in recognizing many of the problems involved with the drug war. What concerns me at the moment is Canada, for instance, is an example of many of the countries are holding open hearings within Congress, in both their Senate and House. For instance, they went ahead and put together select committees which studied the problems for a year and submitted it. One of the recommendations that came from both of those groups was that they attempt to put future policy in the hands of an independent organization, something similar to the National Academy of Sciences here. And what I'm basically asking, for instance, I would take this question about how dangerous is marijuana, or what is the impact of prohibition on children versus a regulated market. I would submit that people's children are much more at risk from the activities of the illegal market, which...
Oh, no question, because they get shot in the bargain if they have to walk past the wrong street corner.
But I'm trying to get to asking you about how you can go about getting more public awareness, more public discussion and debate in the manner that Canada, for instance, has.
All I can do is I can make statements, I can make speeches. I don't control the media. And I'm glad to have this opportunity, but I don't know the answer because it's up to the media.
Well,
I don't control them. I can speak out as I've done. I'm working on several pieces of legislation to fight back against this excessively rigid approach, that's as much as I can do.
Yeah, well, I guess, sir, I appreciate that, and I guess I was asking for an extension of that in that one of the bills that has not been submitted is this notion that originally, I guess, came out of Hoover Institution, a conservative think tank, to have an independent commission formed that would be a non-political source of recommendations and of data and information.
Well, you know, we tried that once under Richard Nixon. They did have a National Commission on Marijuana, and it came back and said, you know what, you should make this no longer a crime because it really isn't hurting anybody and you're doing more harm than good, and they ignore the recommendation. I mean, in America, commissions could recommend, but it's not self-enforcing. In the end, let me put it to you this way. There's no shortcut around democracy. We got to get the public to demand this to happen. There's no body of experts that's going to be able to take care of this for us, because whatever the experts say will have to be acted on by the politicians.
Yeah, and let me engage you as a friend, Congressman, understanding fully that I agree with you. I understand that perspective. But at the time that the Nixon Commission happened, I would suggest, first of all, the climate was a great deal different. We had, for instance, in polls roughly around that
time. But again, there is no expert that's going to deliver you. You've got to do this politically. You've got to have people call up their members of Congress and lobby them and do it.
I mean, I'm 100% in favor of
that. Well, that's the answer.
And
that's the answer. The fact is, if you know, experts have given things, have made recommendations, politicians are ignoring them to some extent. I think, again, it's probably because of this fear. And this is a place where people get to vote on who the congressman is, and they got to tell them, if you keep this up, that's another reason why I won't vote for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Sarah. And one last note. You probably know him, Professor Randy Barnett at Boston University up there your way, has a very interesting analysis of the recent Texas decision and the discussion of liberty versus privacy in the Constitution.
Well, I learned one thing from that decision, by the way. I've always felt that stupidity can make you bigoted, that stupid people tend to be bigots. But when I read Scalia's opinion, which is really quite dumb, I also learned that bigotry can make you stupid. That no matter how intelligent you are, if you hate other people enough, that can lead you into stupidity, and that's certainly where Scalia wound up in that opinion.
Well, gentlemen, I think that's going to have to do it for the day. I want to thank the callers. Congressman, thank you so much. I've had Canadian senators and members of European Parliament, and you're my first U.S. elected official, and I thank you, sir.
Well, thank you.
All right, sir.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right, folks, one more quick little message.
For their work as a grand deceptor, hypocrite, lying weasel, bigot, corporate whore, baby raper, superstitious shill, or ultra sinner, Cultural Baggage is proud to present the Coward of the Week.
Marijuana is not a serious drug of abuse. You can't be addicted to marijuana. We have to not be subject to reefer madness. It's people who try to tell Americans marijuana is something you got to pay attention to. It's a law.
Now, if you had actually said those exact words you just heard, I wouldn't be nominating our country's drug czar, John Walters, for this week's Coward of the Week. It seems that Mr. Walters is touring the nation to the 25 most populous cities to deliver a message to the local drug enforcement that they need to foot the bill for the DEA. The only problem is he's not alerting the local press, just a few favorite buddies, and they hold these events at junior high schools, treatment centers, or old folks' homes. So this week we're naming you, Drug Czar Walters, as Coward of the Week.
Okay, next week be sure to join us. Our guest will be Cliff Schaefer, the creator of the website druglibrary.org. I guess that's about it, folks. We appreciate you listeners out there. Give me an email, deanbecker@cultural-baggage.com.
For my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. KPFT, Houston.